Here are some of the stories that NPR News is working on this afternoon. It was 100 years ago today that the Wright brothers made their historic first flight at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina. Organizers of a reenactment of that flight say they'll try again. An attempt earlier today did not get off the ground. President Bush noted the Wright brothers did not succeed on their first attempt to fly either. And in Baghdad today, a blast left at least 17 people dead, raising more questions about security in the city, though late reports indicate that that explosion may have been due to an accident rather than to an attack. But you can hear details on those stories coming up later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. The jury in the trial of 18-year-old Lee Boyd Malvo began deliberations today in Chesapeake, Virginia, after 3 weeks of testimony involving nearly 140 witnesses. If convicted, Malvo could face the death penalty for the murder of FBI analyst Linda Franklin outside a Home Depot store in Virginia during last year's spree of sniper shootings in the Washington, D.C. area. Defense lawyers have argued an insanity plea for Malvo, saying that the teen was brainwashed by convicted sniper John Allen Muhammad. The prosecution, on the other hand, maintains that Malvo was in control and responsible for his actions through the planning and execution of the crime. Joining us now on the phone to help us recap the events and sort out the elements of this trial that the jury is now weighing is Adam Liptak. He's been covering the Malvo trial for the New York Times. He's with us from the courthouse complex in Chesapeake, Virginia, and good to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
To many, the insanity plea is the stuff of television crime drama, and yet here it is the crux of the defense's entire case. What made the defense think such a plea was appropriate here?
What a lot of legal experts say is that the defense is not actually hoping to get him an acquittal on insanity grounds, but has used insanity as a vehicle to turn the main phase of the trial, the phase of the trial devoted to determining whether Malvo is guilty or innocent, into kind of an extended mitigation phase, which typically comes later, typically comes after conviction, an attempt to humanize this young man and explain how he got himself into this crime spree and sensitize the jury. So it may well be, and the flavor of the closing argument by Michael Arif for the defense had this flavor, it may well be more of an attempt to try to spare his life than it is an authentic attempt to think that he can get off on insanity grounds.
Now, how did they try to prove it? There were all these interviews with psychiatrists and psychologists that they presented as evidence.
Well, they first of all put on a couple of weeks of people who described Malvo as a unexceptional, in many ways good kid, growing up in a poor, sheltered environment in Jamaica, and saw him transformed under the influence of a former military man who took an interest in him, who was quite charming, John Muhammad. So there was a lot of setup of just a kind of this is your life narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And that was followed by a series of mental health experts who drew various conclusions from that narrative. And two of them said in so many words that the level of indoctrination or brainwashing was so severe that it amounted to insanity. And the legal definition of insanity, a very difficult one to meet in Virginia, is that he had to not be able to tell right from wrong. And two mental health experts did say that. Prosecution experts then followed and scoffed at that notion.
And they also, in that sort of rebuttal phase, introduced a couple of letters that Malvo had written while he was in jail.
Yes, and those came up again yesterday during closing arguments, and that they, along with taped confessions that Malvo made about a year ago, are two very, very difficult things for the defense to deal with, because in the letters written in the late summer or early fall, Malvo continues to present himself as an unrepentant, violent guy looking for an opportunity to commit further violent crimes and to escape, and counseling other inmates on how to do those things. And the notion that he was under the spell of John Muhammad works better if he has since separated himself from Muhammad and reformed himself. And the letters are, cut in the other direction.
Some of them say, wait your turn. Don't let them know what you're thinking. Let them think that you're perfectly harmless. And then when you get your opportunity, that's when you act.
That's right, and they also work in a technical way for the prosecution, because the prosecution, in order to get the death penalty, has to prove that Malvo is a future threat, and these letters are surely some evidence of that.
One of the things in perhaps his favor is his youth. I mean, that's not legally an issue, I guess, in the state of Virginia, but he was not only 17 at the time of these attacks. He's a young-looking man.
He's young-looking. He has a goofy sort of aspect, which makes him seem immature. People have said that his maturity lags a couple years behind his chronological age. And sure, I mean, on some level, the jury has to take that into account. And to return back to your opening question, in a way, the insanity plea helps them make that point, because in describing Muhammad's influence over him, they return again and again and again to his relative youth.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things they had wanted to do was bring Muhammad into the courtroom. He wouldn't testify for, you know, fear of incriminating himself, and that's understandable, but they wanted to show how much bigger he was than Lee Boy Malvo.
That's right, and that would have been actually a very striking contrast, because Malvo is 6'1", 180 pounds. Muhammad.
Muhammad, rather. Yes.
Malvo, at the time of the crimes, was 5'5", 125 pounds. He's grown a couple inches since then, but the very fact that he's still a growing boy, is itself again some powerful, striking, if not exactly evidence, but information about just how young he is.
Now, you were talking earlier about the This Is Your Life, Lee Boyd Malvo. Members of Muhammad's family have come out to support Malvo's defense.
That's right, and the strongest, one of the very strongest pieces of testimony on behalf of Malvo came from a son of Muhammad's named Lindbergh Williams, who talked about a summer he spent with his father after his parents were divorced, where John Muhammad didn't want Lindbergh to go home, and how manipulated and indoctrinated Lindbergh felt. And the testimony did not have any kind of coached quality to it. It seemed like a very authentic statement from a boy who still loves his father, but who said that he really is capable of a sort of mind control.
We're speaking with Adam Liptak of the New York Times. He's covering the trial of Lee Boyd Malvo. The jury is weighing the evidence in the case, and a verdict is expected sometime. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Adam, I'm just going back to that off-the-cuff remark I made, but any indication of when we might expect a verdict?
Well, you know, I'm sitting here in a room full of journalists, and a lot of them seem to think today. I might guess tomorrow, but it's all speculation. We know very little about the jury and about how they're going to go about this business. Some of the decisions they have to make, just as a mechanical matter, are a little bit technical, and they have to work their way through some relatively complicated jury instructions and forms. So it could be quick, and it could be quite some time.
The Muhammad jury, and again, every jury is different, no matter the fact it was just up the road from this town, Chesapeake, Virginia. Muhammad verdict did not take very long to come in. Now, you've covered an awful lot of cases. Is this case, you know, more complicated than the Muhammad case, do you think?
It is in a couple ways. The Muhammad case used a very broad definition of a requirement in Virginia law for the death penalty, the trigger man requirement, that only the actual shooter gets put to death. The judge in the Muhammad case read that requirement so broadly that it almost disappeared from the case, and therefore Muhammad was allowed to be convicted if he merely had a sort of controlling role in the shootings, even if he was not the actual shooter.
An issue that may be further explored on appeal.
Yes, exactly right. Here we have the more traditional trigger man rule, and there was a great deal of discussion during the closing arguments about the evidence pro and con on whether Malvo had been the trigger man. That will require the jury to sift that evidence in a way the Muhammad jury did not have to. And then the second very... The additional complicating factor is, as you said before, this insanity defense, which layers on and comes after they decide whether he did that which he's accused of doing.
Now, Malvo didn't take the stand himself, did he?
He did not. It would have been a very unusual move in the main case to let him take the stand. Although his voice and his statements were a significant part of the trial, we heard hours of audio taped confessions, very chilling in their detailed description of the shootings, and of Malvo's quite lighthearted attitude in describing them. So we saw a bit of Malvo that way, and then more recently the mental health experts, many of them recounted their hours and hours of interviews with Malvo, and depending on whether they were defense or prosecution experts, one saw an engaging boy emerging from the indoctrination, or the sort of ruthless young man that the recent letters depict.
Now, he, as you mentioned in his confession, said initially in these taped conversations that he'd been the trigger man in almost all of the sniper attacks.
That's right.
And he later told the psychiatrist he'd been the trigger man, the man who actually pulled the trigger on the rifle in only one. Is this the case in which he said he pulled the trigger?
No, the Washington area shooting that he takes credit for is that of Conrad Johnson, a bus driver shot on October 22nd of 02 in Aspen Hill, the very last shooting before these guys were captured. And there's, you know, of course, it may be that he's simply telling the truth. It may also be that he's admitting to a shooting which he described in particular detail on the tapes and got exactly right, and also took place in a jurisdiction which does not have the death penalty for juveniles.
Now, in this jurisdiction, is this one of those jurisdictions where they will consider guilty or innocent and guilty and sentenced to life or death at the same time?
In Virginia, we're going to have an up or down or insanity decision first, and if he's convicted of a capital crime, then we'll have an additional sentencing phase, three more days of testimony, and then the jury goes out again to decide whether it should be life in prison without parole or death.
So as they weigh guilty or innocent by reason of insanity, do you think that this is an especially confusing case for a jury to handle?
You know, it's a little bit confusing because there are several core of the case is, did he or did he not kill the FBI analyst Linda Franklin? But in order to move that killing, which by itself is first-degree murder, not a death-eligible count, to move it to a death case, additional things have to be proven. We talked about the trigger man requirement. In addition to that, they also have to prove one of two other things, that this shooting was part of a terror campaign, or that this shooting was one of more than one over a three-year period. So that has meant that a lot of other evidence has come in the case, and it also means that the jury has to work through and sift through these various requirements of exactly where they end up, whether it's first-degree murder or capital murder or not guilty by reason of insanity.
Adam Liptak, thanks very much.
Thank you, Neil.
Adam Liptak, a reporter for the New York Times covering the Malvo trial, and he joined us from the court complex as they await a verdict there in Chesapeake, Virginia. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.